Mr. Belvedere gets sacked, Larry the Cable Guy saves the world, and the fifth element is love. This week in 30-20-10.
30-20-10, 30-20-10. Three decades, every show, sometimes associated videos. 30-20-10, 30-20-10. The prizes are awaiting as we're going to the 80s and the 90s and 2000s.
Welcome to a new episode of 30-20-10, a weekly look back at what happened 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and 10 years ago. That's 87, 97, and 2007. I'm one of your hosts, Brett Elston.
I'm Chris Antista. don't know a lot about the movies this week, but I can't wait to talk about them. Thank you, Di.
Okay, I'm Diana Goodman, Monkey Business Captain Diana Goodman.
I'm the Lovematic Dave Rudden.
Wow, that's this week. But what we do every week is we look at movies, music, TV, and games of that exact week. We are in May 5th through the 11th. Obviously, we're in 2017, looking back at all the decades prior.
Yeah. Happy Cinco de Mayo, everybody.
That's right. Oh, you're right. That means we're also in the period where everyone becomes even more of a superficial Star Wars fan.
Oh, no,
but
we're just past that. It, yeah.
Well, yeah, we just passed it, but it's Revenge of the 5th is,
is the end of it.
Right.
I like to alternate whether I celebrate May the 4th or Cinco de Cuatro. It's tough to pick. They're on the same day.
I prefer to celebrate Star Wars Rogue May 1.
Ah, wait, yes.
Sorry.
If you're going to if you're going to celebrate it, our buddies at Palette Swap Ninja have released their Sgt. Pepper's full concept album, Star Wars meets Beatles Sgt. Pepper's, into Princess Leia's stolen Death Star plans, and it's free at PalaceSwapNinja.com.
I force hung it on me, Wolf.
Coming up on Classic Corner very soon.
Should be available now to listen in your band camps and your SoundClouds and all that stuff.
We'll begin this week with a quick bit of news. If you've been following along since our episodes in 86 and 87, the Iran-Contra biz has been percolating underneath the surface now for a while, but this week, May 5th to the 11th, Senate Iran-Contra hearings open. More on that later.
For violating the Konami code of conduct.
Yeah, these are going on so long. I think they entered the code and got 30 more lives hearings.
Yeah, and like we don't get the headliners until like summer.
Yeah,
we get like a couple months before. Like I remember it being televised all the time and everyone watching it and being like, "This is boring."
When do we get to the fireworks?
Is this giving the need for court TV?
Interesting question.
Well, I think anyone, especially Salt of the Earth folk like where I grew up, love to watch. I think anyone can get into this. Watching people in power get theirs. like be under the hot seat. Like
I always thought that too.
You're
until
gonna
this.
Get away with a lot in your career, but oh man, we got you. Like there's just some like I could see like anyone watching being like, well, if they did something, let's get them.
But
until this year, I guess. And
no.
This is the outlier.
Everyone who's in their party is a goddamn hero.
Of course.
Is in the other party
is
a goddamn monster.
Is the ultimate villain and wants to take away.
But it does speak to like the barren landscape of network television pre-prime time and like local news. Like they could just broadcast the trial all day long.
But in related news this week, Gary Hart drops out of the presidential race after reporters uncover an affair with Donna Rice, former beauty queen and Don Henley's girlfriend.
What?
Yeah, I didn't know that last part. That's how they met. They met at a party Don Henley threw.
Wow.
What?
The true end of the innocence.
So 30 years ago, an affair could derail your candidacy, whereas now you can just grab things, and that's fine.
Yes. Hart was a senator from Colorado when the frontrunner of Democratic nomination when he nearly won in 84. He'd only officially been in the race for a month. In December, he jumped back but got crushed by the juggernaut Michael Dukakis.
That's so sad.
Moving into movies this week, in 1987, Secret of My Success is still number one. Talked about that a few weeks ago. New this week, though, Gardens of Stone, starring Vegas star James Caan.
It's the latest in the strategy of titling a movie that I'll never see it.
Yeah.
D.B. Sweeney, James Earl Jones, Loris Fishburne,
Dean Stockwell, Angelica Houston,
and directed by Francis Ford Coppola.
What?
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard of this.
And
this
here's a clip.
I swear, after around Platoon, probably it's about 85 onward. All of a sudden, Vietnam movies all over the place. And
let's celebrate the even greater generation. Boomers.
TriStar Pictures presents a film from Francis Coppola.
This unit nom, they print up these little cards. They say, killing is our business, and business is good.
Gardens of Stone.
Well, here, burying is our business. our business is better.
It was a dangerous time to be young.
Yeah. I get it now. It's a cemetery.
Very not groovy.
I was going to say you could title any movie this, but they're probably referencing a cemetery.
It's a cemetery. Right. Yeah, right. Around the burial detail. I think the most interesting the thing that jumps out at me is Lawrence Fishburne still credited as Larry back then.
Wow.
But I mean, he worked with Coppola before in Apocalypse Now when he was 14.
Yeah.
Larry Fish.
Yeah, yeah, he's one of the dudes on the boat. And even at this point, simultaneously, Cowboy Curtis on Pee-wee's Playhouse? Yeah. What the hell?
I know. It's weird that, I mean, after the insanity that was Apocalypse Now, he's like, yeah, sure, I'll put a uniform on again, Francis. As long as I don't have to get on a fucking boat and there's no tigers.
Wow, I'm trying to see if there's anybody else who bothered to, like, yeah, I'll head out there on a U-boat with you, Francis. Why not? What could happen? And Casey says Misko, who I just saw in 3 o'clock High, an actor we never fully utilized from Young Guns. Yeah, and 3D from Back to the Future.
The easy way.
Yeah. And also this week is Hot Pursuit with John Cusack and Laser Time Hall of Fame inductee Robert Loggia.
Johnny.
Dan and Lori had more than sex.
We cruise into the Caribbean.
Buddy!
They had chemistry.
Are you ready for the moon, the stars, the surf?
I can't go. I've learned chemistry. I gotta stay until we make up.
You serious?
Catching her eye was one thing.
Girls that pretty don't like to be disappointed.
Why are they using prep school music?
When does Robert Loggia show up and fight them?
With someone scrupulous fucking your wrong type.
Young Danny is following his rich girlfriend's family to the Caribbean.
Yeah.
All the things we cared about.
God, I'm like scrubbing through the trailer and I can't find Robert Loggia. I'm closing this tab.
He's the second build.
He's kind of unrecognizable. He looks like, I don't know, like he's just came out of the jungle and like no one told him the war was over.
It's still real to me.
Yeah, he's like, I don't
Mr.
know.
President.
He's like a mercenary or something that helps John Cusack try to get to his rich girlfriend. And there's wackiness.
Does anybody have a calcium-rich drink?
So relatable, this movie.
Oh, that's Chairman Steve's House of In-Jokes. I should stop.
TV this week. There's light on movies, so we're off into television.
Decent week in TV. Off the top, we have a semi-cancellation. Mr. Belvedere was canceled by ABC. However, and this is probably one of the first times this has happened in TV history, fans reacted so negatively that ABC uncanceled it in time. Well, it caused a little bit of a delay for the next season. It didn't debut until October. You know, most shows just debut in September back then.
Wow.
But, people want their Brock Tuna, turns out.
What brought on the cancellation?
It didn't have good ratings. Even when it came back, it was like it did dip in the ratings.
Yeah, I only in reading about ALF, network executives change hand. They look at the show, and it's not hugely rated anymore.
But it's not their success, so why?
It's not their success, and it's like, do we really need this on our network where you could be the show with the puppet in it? Let's just cancel it. And then syndication comes up, and it's like, that was the dumbest decision we've ever made. Yeah. If we kept it on the air for 2 more years, we'd all be triple quadrillionaires? I forget how this works.
Also this week, May 7th, 1987, The Cosby Show airs a backdoor pilot for A Different World. It's an episode called Tillman, where Denise Huxtable goes off to college. She would be there for a few years, and I think make a few appearances, but like this was kind of
in the beginning a lot.
Yeah.
I thought, because like...
Oh no, she was like a... I mean, Denise went from
Cosby Show
to A Different World. I think after A Different World ended, she went back.
Allegedly busted down because of Angel Heart, the Mickey Rooney, Robert De Niro movie we mentioned earlier, where she appeared nude in a lot of sex scenes, and Cosby's like, no, I need things squeaky clean. I'm above reproach. get off my show. And we did a laser time on backdoor pilots and just being naive to this process. I was confused as to what show was which. Because, I just remember I was just watching this live and, is this still the Cosby Show? Why are they in college?
Oh, did we get to... Did we already talk? Maybe you haven't yet. But this season finale of Golden Girls this year?
No. You're revisiting it. Have you watched it?
I just watched that. Season two...
Tell me there's a cliffhanger.
I think it's done not until 2 weeks from now. So,
season two finale is a similar thing where it's a backdoor pilot. And and we just watched it and it's like, this
week
sucks.
They try to introduce another team of old people?
No, we'll get there.
It's an awkward thing. Maybe even worthy of a laser time when it's like this show is just taking a complete left turn. Yeah. Your favorite characters are barely in the episode.
Yeah, that's generally what a backdoor pilot
yeah,
does.
Yeah, and it's almost every instance, it's just like, this is dreadful. I want to see the characters.
And if you don't
like.
Know, a backdoor pilot is where they try and introduce a new show on the back of a more popular show. So all of a sudden, on the Cosby Show, if, for instance, a bunch of new characters take precedent and there's a new location.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Golden Girls one is just shameful.
Yeah. I love when they do that and it doesn't become a pilot, because I remember, like, flipping the channels once, and I don't know, like, or the TV, I turned it on and it was on The Nanny, and I was like, was The Nanny a show about a hair salon? I don't remember that being it. And then, like, it gets to the end of the episode and Fran Drescher shows up again. I'm like, oh, this was a backdoor pilot that went nowhere.
Wow, man. There's one particularly bad one where it was Married with Children, like, their second to last season, I think. And it is, like, there was a Simpsons joke, like, you broke my heart. That's petty theft. Like, really, like, shitty, awful. Like, it was, like, all roommates...
Mm-hmm.
That knew Kelly, and Kelly stopped by for like two minutes and was like, this
I
is
thought
a right.
I'm not a big
I think I might have seen that
Married with Children buff, but I thought somebody said it had two backdoor pilots for with Matt LeBlanc he got two times where he appeared on Married with Children to spin off his own
and
show,
and after those two failures, then they tried it again with a complete group of randos who are not funny at all.
Again, lasertimepodcast.com. We have a whole show about backdoor pilots. And if you need to know what we're talking about, remember when Jay Sherman showed up on The Simpsons?
Yeah.
I guess that doesn't count. The show was already on. Forget what I said.
Yeah, it's a crossover.
May 8th, 1987, the TV special Garfield Goes Hollywood airs.
I remember this.
In this special, Garfield and Odie take part in a star search show, sort of show called Pet Search. And they make it all the way to the finals in Hollywood with the help of John. And
I
blah,
just
blah,
didn't
blah.
Care that much.
Yeah. Star Search Kids is a show that is on TV with Ed McMahon. Was he the host of Star Search?
You are correct, sir.
Yeah,
and it was Imagine American Idol, only it was like, what any talent do you have? Come on, and we'll watch you twirl a baton.
Can you paint a mouth on your belly and put a hat over your head?
It's directed by Phil Roman, I think, whose studio... is most famous for doing The Simpsons. That's Gracie. But they're the contract animators. And I will go to bat for some of the Garfield specials.
All right.
And this is not fresh in my mind, but the Christmas special and Halloween special are excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Halloween's great.
That's because they're written by Jim Davis, someone who cares. Mm-hmm. And it's not just farmed out to, like, let's make Garfield as many things as possible. And that's why the Peanut specials are so great. Most of them are written by Schultz. And this is written by Davis, so I'm assuming it's probably on par with... the Garfield Halloween special.
I remember two things specifically from this, that there is a musical number, as there often is with Lou Rawls.
Mm-hmm.
And
General Rawls?
Yes. and that it bugged me, even as a little kid, it bugged me that there's like, they're going Hollywood and there's Hollywood stuff and like a limo drives by and the animation is so bad that, I mean, it's a regular sedan, like if you're counting windows. It's like, no, it's got a front seat and a back seat. That's not a limo.
You're not thinking on Garfield's scale. Every car's a limo to him. Even Steve Urkel's.
That's a good point. But I actually remember the last I actually remember the last
point.
Line of the song.
That's
I actually remember
good, Chris.
Really?
The last line of the song is that when someone asks what's your sign, point up in the hills and say, that's mine.
Wow. Hollywood land.
There's
Thank
your sign.
You. I am a million years old.
City of stars.
I'm halfway turned to dust right now.
What else we got?
Disappointed that I couldn't find a clip for this, but also this week the Murder, She Wrote Season 3 finale aired with starring William Atherton and G.W. Bailey as guest stars.
This man has no dick?
Yes, and also Move It, Captain Whatever from Police Academy.
Yes. Oh, fuck, what's his name?
Who's also in Mannequin.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yes.
That guy.
Yes.
That guy. Yeah. He's a total hit.
He's
that
capital
guy.
That guy.
I'm looking it up.
Well, there was a mini series with a total that girl.
GW Bailey.
May 10th, 1987, the ABC miniseries Queenie airs. It starred Mia Sara, who's best known as Sloane Peterson in Ferris Bueller's Day Off and then completely disappearing afterwards.
No, and Legend.
Well, I mean, after like the mid 80s, what happened to her. I don't want to look it up because I'm scared what I'm going to discover. She plays, I think this is a true story. She was a half-Indian woman who rose to stardom in Hollywood despite opposition to her mixed heritage because this was the 40s.
Is this a Toni Morrison book?
I think so.
Okay.
This is part of the trailer.
Little trailer here.
Her beauty would enrapture many.
I want to change my life. I want you to be my agent.
Her determination would bring her everything she desired most. Power, wealth, fame. the world would know her as one of the most celebrated stars of Hollywood's golden era. But only a very special few would know her as Queenie.
Hey, there's a cast call out if you want to hear it.
Oh, all right.
Starring Martin Balsam, Kirk Douglas, Joel Grey, Sarah Miles, Topol, and Mia Sara as Queenie.
Friday?
Queenie!
Coming soon to Laserdisc.
Wow, that's a decent cast of old-timer character actors.
Who is that Topol guy?
Topol?
Mm-hmm. Oh, Topol.
Yeah, he was...
that's Topol number one.
Yes,
yeah,
okay.
No, he's the smoker's toothpaste. He's in Fiddler in the Roof.
I'm trapped in this roof. No, all right.
Yeah.
And
it's the Fiddler on the Roof game where he clips.
Biggest TV event of this week was the season finale of Cheers, in which Shelley Long leaves the show.
I've never seen this, but this is so famous, isn't it?
Yeah, hopefully I don't get the facts wrong, but they're supposed to get married, but she got like an offer to finish her novel or something, so she moved to Boston.
Mm-hmm. No, she moved from Boston. They were in Boston.
Oh, sorry. So she moved to LA, I think.
Part of this contract is you have to write it here.
Yeah.
you can't write it where you live now.
But I included a clip of the final scene, which is it's a little long, but it is kind of touching.
Hey. Have a good life.
Have a good life? Well, that's something you say when something's over. Sam, I'm going away for 6 months. That's all. So no more of this have a good life stuff.
You never know. You could die. I could die. The world could end. One of us could bump our heads and wander the streets for the rest of our life with amnesia. Or maybe one of us will decide they want something else.
None of those things will happen.
Too late.
I'll be back here. I will. I'll see you in 6 months. Okay?
Okay.
Okay. That's better.
She walks up the door.
She leaves. He's taking off all his clothes.
Have a good life.
Ooh.
Because there was some friction on the set.
Well, she would be back for the series finale.
Yes.
Yeah, what, like 4 5 years later?
Something like that, yeah.
More than that.
Yeah. I think 93 was that finale.
But it was supposed to be a kind of a cliffhanger, but it was pretty clear she was...
She was leaving.
She
had
wanted
a film
to leave
career.
And people wanted her...
She had a film career. She had Outrageous Fortune we had a while back. She did well in that.
Yeah.
And
True Beverly Hills, who could forget?
Beverly Hills... what's it called?
Money Pit.
Yeah. Yeah, she thought she could build.
I did like how they they poked fun at like season finales right in there, like maybe we'll die. Maybe I'll get amnesia.
Maybe we'll move to a desert island.
I couldn't tell if they were literally building in like a failsafe, like maybe she'll come back. Maybe we'll get you to come back next season. I will be back in 6 months.
Well, I think to its credit it's elegant enough to be any of those.
Yeah.
A cliffhanger, a bookend. A firing.
Yeah. And they would make fun of her on the show for this for years. I went to a Cheers taping in probably 92.
Wow.
Yeah. It's the episode where they go to the drive-in theater. Mm-hmm. And they're watching like either Godzilla or Godzilla ripoff series at the drive-in. And they're like, oh, well, that's, you know, so-and-so Umeki, she's in the first couple and then she left to try to do something else. And like, why would an actress leave a successful series? That's silliness. Yeah. Fuck you, Shelley.
Probably, again, with that syndication money in hindsight, she stayed on board for that entire run. She probably would have had a lot more money than those movies.
Well, yeah, but just on syndication, I'm sure she did okay.
Yeah, probably.
Games this week, sometime in May 1987. It's hard to pinpoint again, as this happens a lot. Ikari Warriors. A top-down, vertically scrolling shooter where you play two buff dudes named Spike and Nail, I swear. It's Paul and Vince, I'm sorry.
Yes.
They battle enemy forces using guns and tanks. It's in the arcades in 86, and it hit the NES, the Nintendo Entertainment System, this month in 87. Two sequels, Victory Road and...
I forget the other one.
One of the few trilogies of the NES.
Yeah, and like a rare co-op... shooter for the NES, which, like, me and my brother would play this, and, like, once you get that tank, man,
yeah,
shit is...
And
yeah, I meant to go back and look which was the first to do this, because this was Commando, Guerrilla War, Jackal, like the top-down co-op military shooter.
Yeah.
It was pretty prevalent.
And also, I think this is the one that had a code. Every time you died, you could do a... Because there's only two buttons on the NES, two action buttons, the A button and the B button. And anytime you died or game overed, I guess, when you ran out of your three lives, you could basically spell ABBA, A-B-B-A, and you would just come back to life.
Dancing Queen.
So I finished the game with a friend at a friend's house, like, just ABBA, 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 and you can beat the game pretty easily.
What a bizarre time.
Akari Warriors 3 is the rescue.
The rescue.
And also, Akari means rage, so it's Rage Warriors, yeah, rage, which is the coolest name.
Or Fury.
Take that, Vietnamese Fury, villagers.
Yeah, either one. Like, they're both 6 1/2 dozen the other. Music this week, I Just Died in Your Arms Tonight by Cutting Crew. It's still number one. We talked about that earlier. New albums include It's Better to Travel by Swing Out Sister and Kiss Me... Kiss Me, Kiss Me by The Cure, a double album including the title track, Why Can't I Be You? And of course, Just Like Heaven, one that you all know.
Beautiful.
So we'll go out with presumably Just Like Heaven.
Oh, yeah, please.
Of course. And when we come back this same week, 1997. Show me, show me, show me how you do that trick. The one that makes me scream, she said. The one that makes me laugh, she said.
You like Laser Time shows? Then you might like Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly bonus show exclusively on patreon.com/lasertime. Here's a taste of what you've been missing. I don't know if it's a good question of the week. The movie you saw the most times for no reason. That movie is My Blue Heaven.
Oh, I love that movie.
And it's weird. I love it, even though there is literally nothing in that movie to love.
I remember seeing it so many times on the rental shelf of my local video store and being like, well, I like Steve Martin. But he looks like a real tool on this cover, and like
he's a former mafia dude.
Sucks. Very specific former mafia dude.
Oh, he's supposed to be Henry Hill. It's allegedly Henry
Hill.
It is
a secret sequel to Goodfellas.
Yeah, the comedy story of Henry Hill after Goodfellas. Yes, sequel, you're right.
But before he became Hank Hill.
But without giving him any money.
Yeah, before he went to the...
What?
Getting out of the mafia and opening a propane
dealership.
Always
wanted to be a gangster.
They carried my mother's grocery home. You know why? It was out of respect.
I just said you ain't right. I didn't mean anything by it.
That made man ain't right.
Get the heck out of here, Tommy. Get Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly, full-length, uncensored, and ad-free Patreon-exclusive podcast, as well as full-length movie commentaries, wrestling and cartoon video commentaries, the first season of Talking Simpson, and more at patreon.com/lasertime, starting at just $5. You'll help us live, and we'll do our best to help you never be bored again.
So confused, I don't envy you. I'm a little bit of everything, all roll into one. I'm a bitch, I'm a lover, I'm a child.
That is Meredith Brooks, bitch, bringing us in this week. This song,
if we could find a clip of Casey Kasem introducing the song, that's bitch, rocking it at number one.
I know I heard this a lot, but like, could they air this on MTV, or would it just be I'm a...
No,
I'm a mother.
It was on all the time.
This is like peak me staying up till 3 in the morning every night watching MTV, and like it was on all the time.
It was on the radio all the time.
But this is also one of those songs, Meredith Brooks, that we did karaoke a couple years ago. I mean, we do it once a year at least out here, but like there was one a few years ago where like you never know what the song that night's going to be that everyone goes like, how have we never done this? And the whole room lights up and... our friend Scott Butterworth picked this song, and this came on, and the whole room is like, "Holy shit! I haven't thought of this song in 15 years," and it was nuts. Like 12 people screaming this song at the top of their lungs.
God, what a bitch they are!
Yeah. So hats off, Meredith Brooks, 20 years old. Notorious B.I.G.'s "Hypnotized" still number one. Another new album, "Flaming Pie" by Paul McCartney. Honky by the Melvins, Middle of Nowhere, Hanson's debut with Mbop.
We'll get to it.
Man, yeah. I just can't believe the mom from Family Ties made a song called Bitch. Oh, wait, that's Meredith Baxter. Sorry.
It's a deep dive. Michael Jackson and the Bee Gees are inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, or the R&R HOF, as some kids would.
I remember there was a little bit of controversy in that Michael Jackson kept saying, I'm not going to show up. You have to introduce me as the King of Pop.
Wow.
But it's like, but it's the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
All I really have is the Beat It guitar solo. News this week. The Hartford Whalers become the Carolina Hurricanes.
My word.
Yay.
Whaling wasn't popular anymore.
It took us that long.
Mother Koss got her revenge. Man. That's a Bloodborne joke. Carolina Hurricanes, what sport is this?
This is hockey.
Hockey.
Yes. I was so confused.
If you want a reference for the Hartford Whalers, there's the scene in Mallrats.
Yep.
Where Jason Lee is playing the Sega NHL game, and he's like, the Hartford Whalers, they rarely win.
Oh, yeah, and he's like, I fart when I get a blowjob.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, that's all I remember from that movie at this point.
When I'm relaxed, I squirt.
That's
beautiful, Kevin Smith.
Sailboat.
Sooner. Father's Day movies this week. Robin Williams.
I consider this one of my first true Robin Williams letdowns.
Yep.
Billy Crystal, directed by Ivan Reitman.
Yep.
This should work.
Two really funny people and one of the least funny movies ever.
Jack Lawrence.
Yeah, I have a son, Scott.
Wow.
He's yours.
Dale Putley.
I have a son.
I'm your dad.
Hi, Scotty.
I'm your papa, your daddy, your pair.
When can I see him?
Dale Scott's been missing.
My son is missing?
The only thing they have in common.
Your son ran away? So do mine.
How richly bizarre.
Can you get a picture?
Happened 17 years ago.
There he is.
Oh, he's handsome.
Thank you.
This is my guy.
What is this, a joke?
Yes.
It's the same kid.
I wish it were a joke.
They somehow never showed each other the photograph before showing this person.
Mm. So what's the... They both had the same kid.
They
both
think they're the dad of this kid.
They're both being conned. Thinking they're the father.
And
you gotta find him. Mel Gibson appears as a tattoo artist, and that's all I can remember about it.
But so, like, is just bad jokes not funny?
Yeah, and it's based on a French film.
That's why. They're not funny people.
It's one of, like, it's like the third film we've talked about that's a remake of something that starred Gerard Depardieu. It is. It's significant in that sense, but in almost no other. At the time, there weren't two more famous, funnier people you could put in the film and just totally wasted.
I mean, Billy Crystal with My Giant.
Billy Crystal was still, like, he was very selective in what he did. My grandparents loved him and I loved him. Mm-hmm. Like, man. But he gets to shine as the funnier person. And I always think that's wrong when you cast Robin Williams, old Dougs, as the less funny person.
They had the Robin Williams mid-90s special of him just vamping in front of the camera for free. Like when he's in front of the mirror trying to impress his invisible son. Mm-hmm. That seems like the Birdcage scene, just bit him by himself this time.
That is my favorite Genesis song, though. Mm. Invisible son. Michael Jackson's Ghosts.
I've never heard of this.
I don't
know what
this is. No. Oh, okay. It's a short film. I remember seeing it on MTV, or probably on VH1 a couple years later. Mm-hmm. It's got amazing makeup in it.
It's directed by Stan Winston.
It's credited as directed by Stan Winston.
Yeah. Legendary makeup effects guy.
Yeah.
Jurassic Park. Let me bring you in.
I like a lot of stuff. Yeah.
Directed Pumpkinhead. Hello.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it's about these parents and these kids, including Michael Jackson, who's kind of looks like Roger Ebert. He's wearing so much makeup. And then they go into the spooky house, and spooky things happen. And they're, like, scared. And then the spooky thing starts singing and dancing. And Michael Jackson rips his face off, and there's a skeleton under it. And he's singing and dancing. And then they're happy. And then something slightly scary happens. Repeat.
Yeah.
And they're trying to be like, this is going to be the next Thriller. And it's like, but it's
not. The next Moonwalker.
Because it doesn't have a plot. It's actually really repetitive. But, I mean, the dancing and the makeup are spectacular.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, and the effects are okay, actually.
I missed this completely.
Well, it might be a mix of, like, previously shot videos and newly shot footage, as far as I can. I just don't know.
No.
But it's written by Michael Jackson and Stephen King, directed by Stan Winston, and seems like Michael Jackson's vainglorious stab at Creepshow. Like, trying to make an anthology film.
Kinda, yeah. Yeah, but it's not like a true anthology.
I did know this exists. It's not on DVD. I don't know when. I'm guessing it's probably on YouTube, uncut, in like the most standard of definition.
I can confirm.
Yep.
Official upload from Michael Jackson Vivo account.
Whoa. What about your friend?
Wow, yeah, but it is. It's 4 minutes long just for the Ghost song, so who knows. But the big movie this week is...
There is no talking in this trailer.
The following film.
Just to let you know, we're in the 90s.
Down, six underground.
250 years in the future, The Fifth Element.
This is, I was looking for a trailer where, like, this, you know, in a world. And they market this so, so cleverly in that the trailer is just outrageous visual after outrageous visual. So you want to go, I want to see what the fuck's going on here. Yeah, it's like what The Matrix did, too. Like, we're just going to show you all the coolest shit, not tell you what the story's about.
Yep.
You got to go figure it out for yourself.
It's a game trailer for a movie. And look at all these great cutscenes.
It's just in the future, and it gets that great, like, you know, Blade Runner-y Star Wars thing of, like, this is a lived-in universe. It's not super glamorous, but there are moments.
It kind
of
sucks.
All the apartments are very small.
Cigarettes are really short. Didn't predict vape.
But just, it's just like, I saw this opening night, and it was... I loved it, and the whole audience was super on board, and like I miss getting a weird, super visually nuts movie like this every few years. That follows a blockbuster template that gives you on a big adventure where a, you know, a regular guy or hero is pulled into this crazy scenario. Like, that's always fun if it's done right, and this just kind of came out of nowhere. It's not like based on a comic book as far as I know. It's
Luc Besson, a famous French visual director who kind of got his Hollywood shot here, and I want to say succeeded pretty glowingly. This might be Luc Besson's most successful film ever. And just that it's like Blade Runner with more light and humor. And it's visually
Fun Blade Runner.
He did write and direct Lucy, which
which
I watched on a plane, and by plane metrics, by plane reviews, like an 8 out of 10.
Oh man, it is probably like a 5.
But like
it has been repeating on FX for the last 2 weeks nonstop.
Wow, really?
Every time I turn on the TV and it was on FX because like Fargo was on. I keep hitting the same three scenes in Lucy over and over, and it's visually interesting.
So I'm very curious.
I was becoming a burgeoning film snob, so I saw this opening night with friends and hated it. In hindsight, I think they did that trailer because the dialogue's real hammy and sort of the performances. But it stands out, like, a couple years removed. Dude, it's glorious. This movie's great.
And this is Bruce Willis. You have definitely seen the Mia Jovovich cosplay of this, whether you realize
this is her real big debut. She's kind of the... She kind of carries the movie.
Corbin Dallas multi-pass.
She's great. I don't know. For me, I grabbed the Chris Tucker.
But in costume, you mean like three things of tape that just cover the boobs and the crotch.
Just ace bandages.
Perfectly placed bandages everywhere with bright orange Becky Lynch hair. But this is Chris Tucker's outing as Screaming Man.
And real star here's movies. My number one problem.
Here comes Chris Tucker.
Corbin Dallas! Here he is, the one and only winner of the Gemini Crockett Contest. This boy is fueled like fire. So start melting, ladies, because the boy is hotter than hot. He's hot, hot, hot.
And it goes on. And he yells a lot.
Dude.
I like a lot about Chris Tucker in this movie, but I need 70% less of him.
When they
get into the shootout and he won't stop screeching.
Coming. I can't even do it with Chris Tucker. But for me, I think this is Chris Tucker's best role ever. This is perfect for him. Like, nobody else could have done
that. And Jackie Brown. I love him in Jackie Brown.
So he gets getting shot in a trunk if that's...
Because he wanted chicken sequence. And waffles from Roscoe so much.
That is pretty good.
It's but worth dying
for. His blonde Q-bert nose hair, beautiful.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the outfits he wears, the costumes in this are fantastic.
I do like it. It's almost too long to me, but when someone does it right, I really like it. When they do that scene, but with, like... It's a GIF, and it's Ruby Rod saying, Nintendo gamers, do you want F-Zero? Do you want this? Do you want that?
And this movie was also famous for having this like blue tentacle headed opera singer woman singing the song that's supposed to be impossible for a human to sing. But
I have this up. What's Jane Zhang, a Chinese singer, I believe, like just recently,
like did it?
Did it live?
Whoa!
It's a real person.
Oh.
And other notes.
I am not fucking around. That is like being able to witness human evolution. That song was built to be purely digital and unsingable.
Yeah.
And we waited 20 years and someone did it.
Yeah. That's great.
Holy shit.
But yeah, this Luc Besson has a movie coming out called, geez, did it already come out?
He's retired like 10 times.
Valerian and the City of 1,000 Planets.
Yeah, it looks cool.
So the title is awful.
That title is just Flop City right there. Like, I'm going to go see this movie?
That's real scary. But
okay. Are the Owls of Gahool in there too?
Yes.
Please.
And the Sky Captain of the Tomorrow Days.
But it's directed and produced by Luc Besson. And the one trailer I watched, I was like, Jesus, this looks beautiful. It's the same Fifth Element thing where I'm like, I kind of don't care what it's about. It's just this and movie. Man, who's the other one? Did Gatsby and...
Oh, Baz Luhrmann?
Yeah, those two I kind of put in my head in the same... It's very different things, but like whenever they make a new movie, I'm always like, I'm at least going to watch the trailer and then probably end up seeing it because...
Well, the visuals will be awesome.
Yes, at the very least.
And a shout out of like, man... Gary Oldman's character.
I love Gary
amazing.
Oldman in this movie.
Dude, we quoted this movie all summer.
We
like,
quoted
not one or two
we
or
quoted
three.
Him in The Professional right before this, essentially playing the same character. Instead, he just slicks back his hair, puts on a space helmet, and adds a southern accent.
Yeah.
Oh, Gary Oldman.
I think one of the funniest, it's still one of the goofiest, funniest things. I mean, his whole performance is great, but the part where like the evil space cloud calls him on the phone... I don't know why that just kills me so much, where he's just like, hello, and Kral's like, am I bothering you? I need to talk to you. He's like, oh, no, now's a good time.
Now's
That's
a
fine.
Great time.
It's like, what is this movie?
There's also a pre-Morgan Freeman black president. Right?
Yes, Tiny Lister, Zeus, Debo of Friday fame, the president of the United States.
Is he the president of the universe or just the...
He's on a spaceship the whole time, so I assume. Yeah.
And then his eyes melt out of his face.
Yeah. And we got some Ian Holm in there, too.
This I really want to rewatch
Luke Perry
this.
Gets killed.
Yeah, it's true,
it's
Luke
something
Perry.
For everybody.
He doesn't make it very far.
Mm-hmm. TV
forgot, like, does, yeah, like the first 5 minutes of the movie are like in ancient times, mm-hmm. which is like, well, it's a weird setup.
And they return there later on.
Yes. But TV this week, a lot of memorable stuff. May 5th, 1997, the Married with Children series finale. Kelly is set to get married, but Al finds out that her fiancé is unfaithful and breaks up the wedding. It was one of those instances where they didn't think they were going to be canceled.
Oh.
It was kind of a cancellation.
But
so it's like it's not a big epic episode. It's
but
just
it behaves
like
a season finale. Like, well, we might get back to this next year.
Yeah. Well, no, it's not like even a cliffhanger. It was just like, well, this is kind of muted for a series finale. Huh. It's not a, like... Al finally leaves the house and turns the lights off on the way out. yes, Peg.
It's just, you don't give a 10-year show that debuted with your network a proper send-off.
Well, the last season was like no longer on Sundays. They moved it, to, I think, to Fridays. It kind of and it just kind of sank,
astonishing.
Which is just sad. Yeah.
What season was the one where they like traveled to Europe or something and like literal Dracula's trying to put
their... that was like
I'm gonna guess one of the last three.
I know it was like five or six. I remember it being around
like,
the time.
It's a two-parter, I swear. Yeah. And it ends with like they have made a family plot to bury the Bundys in.
Yeah.
And I'm like, even as like a 12-year-old, I'm like, this is a bit much.
I just remember there's like a long shot where they're being chased by villagers and
yes.
Peg says, thank your father, kids. Thanks, Dad. One of the catchphrases they tried to get over that didn't really work. Going back to movies. May 8th, 1997, Robin Williams and Billy Crystal guest star on Friends. And this scene, this is literally stealing a scene. Because the friends are talking, and then Robin Williams and Billy Crystal just... take over the scene.
Just a cartoon scuffle fight.
Literally,
show you how it's done.
They literally butt into the table that the friends sit at.
What is wrong with me?
What's the matter,
Tim? I have a feeling. My wife is sleeping with her gynecologist.
How do you know?
Well, you know, he's got access. You know, it's a feeling you get, you know?
Like when you go bowling and you know you're in somebody else's shoes?
That's the one.
So you went to Pete's?
What happened?
Something, you know, why is this happening to me? I don't know, maybe it's my wound.
Forget it.
And they literally say, yes, forget what we're saying. These guys, they're so entertaining. And this is also, it's weird that 20 years ago feels like, oh, this is such a... strange time for television, such a bygone era where it's like, these two guys are in the biggest movie of the week. Mm-hmm. They get to have a scene in a sitcom to themselves.
But I did. I went
improvise scene.
Yeah,
just I went. Like, yeah, just let them do it.
I tried to do some research. I assumed they shared a producer or somebody. Like, just throw them on the show. Who gives a shit? Mm-hmm. I have a movie to promote, and I couldn't find any overlap there at all. I don't know how this happened because wouldn't they be playing their own characters or something like that?
Yeah.
Very bizarre.
Yeah, this is also, I think the name of the episode is the one with the Ultimate Fighting Championship. So it's the one where Monica's boyfriend, Jon Favreau, joins the Ultimate Fighting Championship.
Right.
And that way you know it's 1997 because that's the last time Jon Favreau was in good enough shape to play a guy who could be in the UFC.
Is that the one she thought he was going to propose because she saw a receipt for a ring designer?
Yeah.
And it turned out, no, it's someone to design an octagon for his house so he can learn to fight. And then he gets his ass whipped over and over.
So this was like the night of guest stars on NBC because on Suddenly Susan.
Oh great!
This one scene features Judd Nelson. He's on the show. He's having a poker night with a group of celebrities that includes tennis legend John McEnroe, then San Francisco Mayor Willie Brown, Mr. T, and another guy.
Ooh.
Play the clip and let's see if you can figure out who it is.
Okay, boys, it's time to get serious. So let me tell you that all the money that I win from you tonight is the first income I've gotten that's not been garnished by the Bank of Margot.
I hope you have a good lawyer.
Donald, listen, it's 50 cents to open. Okay, here's a news flash. You're rich, all right?
And I didn't get rich by throwing away quarters.
It still hurts.
Yeah. You got rich by being born. I think that's what
I'm Is there anything
I'm
he
the
can't
best
do?
At poker. Spoiler, you're going
to... Everyone knows a pair of twos beats a royal flush. Everyone knows it. I've been hearing it everywhere.
The best are saying it.
It's the best hand.
There's...
All reds.
Spoiler.
The house lost.
We're gonna hear from him again next week, and I feel like they just, like... Donald Trump just, like, had a publicist work overtime for a week. Mm-hmm. Get me on all the shows. I want to be on the best shows. Suddenly Susan. It's the most popular must-see TV show.
The Apprentice doesn't exist yet?
No, not for like.
I know John McEnroe had an NBC game show or reality show too.
Yeah, a game show.
So I was wondering if that was crossing over.
Yeah.
But this other note in here, he's also made the cover star of the magazine Susan works for.
Yes.
And the in-show magazine features a cover saying "Our next president."
Yes.
It's like,
ha 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 ha.
It's insane how many times that happens. The Simpsons predicted it. The Rage Against the Machine Sleep Down in the Fire video has an idiot, like a real idiot outside with a Trump for President sign in like 2004. Why? I feel like I didn't see this coming. How did everybody else?
It's because we're in the darkest timeline, Chris. I'm gonna make us all some felt
It was a big joke. It was
so
like just north of reality of Alfred E. Newman for president. Like, no one meant it. Like, all right. Sorry. Just the comments this week are going to suck.
Well, one thing we can all agree on, America's Funniest Home Videos, that's some good television.
Is the best.
It's the internet before internet.
Yes.
It made some of my favorite Mystery Science Theater 2000 alums rich.
Yeah.
Whereas the show did not.
That is true.
This was like a must-watch show from like 1990 or whenever it first showed as a special.
I go back to my parents' house. It runs for 4 hours on WGN in the middle of the day. And like, this is my best bet. Like, if I have to sit through commercials, this is going to be the most rewarding.
I'm going
to
watch a cat miss a jump. I'm going to watch a baby eat shit.
Yep.
Like, literally and metaphorically.
I'm going to watch a groom fall off the
I'm going to watch
altar.
A kite fly into a cake. This is great. And it's like, but before I'm tired of it, we've moved on.
Yeah. But, I mean, we're at the end of the prime era of America's Funniest Home Videos because May 9th, 1997, the final time that Bob Saget hosted America's Funniest Home Videos to celebrate the occasion... All of the cast members of Full House showed up, except for the Olsen twins.
Yeah, they're too big now.
Yeah. Even 18 years before they wouldn't be on Fuller House, they were already like, man, we're too big for this.
They were, they invented the tween market.
Yeah, we have the Great Pumpkin Babysitting Club Bandits, Caper. Whatever.
Yeah, we're the Kathy Lee Gifford of teenage Walmart clothing.
Fun in the Sun, VHS.
Gimme Pizza.
And I just, I hate that I know, I'm not, I hate that I know this much about AFV, as they call it now.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not going to throw shade at Tom Bergeron.
Because there's no more homes anymore.
There's no more video. But Bob Saget would like play the parts of people in the video. His episodes are the most entertaining.
Shit.
And I swear to Christ, oddly enough, this is one of the shows You could rerun any episode and it'll be fine.
Yeah.
It'll be great.
Yeah.
I kind of wish I'd put the clip of South Park in
here. I love that.
Oh, no.
Oops, I hope I don't get hit by this train. Whoops, I sure did. that's their Bob Saget parody. It's perfect.
It's me, Bob Saget.
Because Bob Saget had a bird and would do a voice for a bird. So anytime there was a bird on, he'd do the same fucking bird voice and it was the best. It was the best. The only show my mom and I liked together until Game of Thrones.
Yes. Nice.
R.I.P. AFE.
It's so still on!
I know. A show I'm sure your mom liked and you knew nothing about, Chris.
Hell yeah.
Was Knott's Landing.
Huh? Oh. This was on a lot in my house.
So there was a, I guess, a miniseries, TV movie, Knott's Landing.
Knott's Landing, failure to launch.
Back to the cul-de-sac.
Oh. I saw that subtitle. Movie.
Did they get that from a boring catchphrase generator?
I mean, all your favorites are back. Don Knotts, I'm assuming.
Me?
I won't
be dead for now. I'm almost dead. Can't even enjoy my retirement.
I would not just watch that. I would be the head of the wiki community for Don Knotts Landing. Yeah. I love that man so much.
I apologize. I know nothing about Knotts Landing.
Knotts Landing was a nighttime soap.
Yeah.
There was the early to mid 80s was like the golden age of nighttime soaps. Mm-hmm. You got your Dallas and your Dynasty are the big ones.
Mm-hmm.
We also
Crest.
Had your Falcon Crests and your Knotts Landings and anything, you know, name a house. You could, I think, hotel probably counts as one.
You wouldn't lump 30 something into that, right? That's
not quite
the same.
No. Okay. Not like a soap.
But it's a more modern version. Just because when I hear this and the other shows you mentioned, I just think of calligraphy and a crest for the logo. That's all I can think of.
Okay, well, let me put it this way. In Too Many Cooks, when there's the zoom in on the house and then a bird turns his head and a zoom in on the house and the bird turns his head over and over and over with prestige music, they're pretty much doing the Knott's Landing opening.
Oh. Wow.
That's the job.
Now you know.
Chris, here's something of interest to you. May 11th, 1997, CBS is The Last Dawn.
The Last Dawn.
The Mario Puzo novel adapted for television starring Danny Aiello. Yay!
Danny Aiello.
Joe Mantegna.
Sal.
And Daryl Hannah. Splash Lee.
One of these things is not like the other. A bunch of Italians in a good Italian role for Mario Puzo, also writer of fucking Soup. Oh, Hollywood, you have too much money.
Yeah,
I do vaguely remember this because people wanted to see something else from Puzo along the lines of The Godfather. It turns out that wasn't Godfather 3. And this was his unadapted book at that point. So it was a multi-part series, I think.
Yeah, it would air over like 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Never saw it.
Yeah.
But I remember its art was like trying to ape the Godfather logo so hard.
It's just
hard.
Like giant Mario Puzo title. Like his name is right there.
Jumping over
picture.
A Don Corleone barrel.
Yeah. But yeah, with the Godfather font.
Yeah.
May 9th, 1997. This is a dramatic left turn. The season finale of Family Matters.
Oh.
And, you know, anytime I bring up Family Matters, it is Wacky City.
Yeah, so anything after like 94 for Family Matters is like...
Here we go.
This is pulled straight from the Wikipedia entry for Family Matters. In the season finale, Urkel and Carl go back in time on board a 1700s pirate vessel where they are made to walk the plank after Urkel accidentally drops his time travel watch overboard. Fortunately, Urkel's girlfriend Myra comes back in time to rescue Urkel and Carl with a copy of a time travel watch Urkel gave her.
That's possible time travel. I love split timelines.
And the best thing about this is that we still have another season of Family Matters ahead.
Canceled by ABC and moved to CBS at this point? Either its last or second to last season, it moved
networks.
That
would explain why it went like extremely wacky and not just like... You know, Stefan Urkel, Robot Urkel, like, those are things I can legitimately conceive of
those
in science.
Down-to-earth
like,
ideas.
Yeah, like, well, no, it's the Nutty Professor. It's the robot from Saved by the Bell. Like, these things are established. A time-traveling watch? Come on. I demand more of my time travel fiction.
Once
thank you.
Talking autonomous Urkel robot showed up in the show. I'm like,
Urkelbot.
Look, like, I'm down to bend reality all the ways you want, but this show started as a family in Chicago, right?
They did, without Urkel.
Without Urkel,
trying to, like, make it through the day.
Well, they solved all the problems of
I
the
guess.
Family.
That, okay.
And so they had to come up with something to fill time.
There were no stories left to tell about
that whole giant cast had to like wait every year to learn whether or not they'd be fired so Jaleel White could enhance his salary.
Yeah.
Until it was eventually like three cast members and Urkel.
And at this point he's
get
already
out of my house, Steve.
And at this point he's already been and stopped being
Sonic,
the voice of Sonic.
Another clip I gotta remember to do next time we talk about wacky Steve Urkel is the Key and Peele clip where it's Steve Urkel basically blackmailing Carl Winslow, like, you're going to continue doing the show, Carl. But the most notable thing, in my opinion, of this week, this is not the season finale of The Simpsons, because the season finale of this season, of season 8, is not a particularly noteworthy episode. It's The Secret War of Lisa Simpson. It's the one where they go to, like, the military camp. But anyway, this episode, May 11th, 1997, is what I think should have been the season finale. It's the Simpsons spinoff showcase.
So funny.
Oh, yes.
Which features three different segments, kind of like a Treehouse of Horror, but three different spinoffs. There's Chief Wiggum PI, which is where Chief Wiggum and Seymour Skinner solve crimes in Nolens.
I can't divulge that information on my client's secret illegal account.
Oh, Lord, I was wishing so fat.
Look, Big Daddy, it's regular Daddy. Then there was The Love Mad at Grandpa, where Grandpa Simpson inhabits a love tester and helps Mo find love.
Seriously, I'm my mother, the car parody.
Yes, and then the first one was Magnum PI. But then the last one is a takeoff of the Brady Bunch Variety Hour.
Oh, man.
It is the Simpsons Family Smile Time Variety Hour, which has the family sans Lisa doing a sketch comedy show.
I just love that the story is that they had to recast Lisa because she didn't want to do the show.
Which is what happened.
Yeah.
It was Jan Brady.
Oh, Jan Brady didn't want to do it. But here is the intro to that show.
Live from Radio City Music Room in downtown Springfield, it's the Simpson Family Smile Time Variety Hour, featuring the Waylon Smithers dancers and the Springfield Baggy Pants players. And now, a family that doesn't know the meaning of the word canceled, the Simpsons.
And by the way,
Married with Children.
That
crowd.
Is the no peg.
Yeah. The toilet flush screamers.
God, all I remember is this bit.
Side of hills. I want piggy. At least think of our dentist bills.
And then they just go from I want candy and a peppermint twist.
Got a new dance and it goes like this.
That's all I remember from this segment.
I get sad thinking because I barely get these jokes, but that is so.
Those
variety shows are so silly.
I tried to watch Brady Bunch variety show.
Agonizing.
It's completely unwatchable.
It's crazy.
But no, my favorite detail at the end is, you know, they do this huge number and then they've got to, you know, stand and smile and wait for the applause and they're like trying to hide that they're panting and sweating.
Oh yeah. And Tim Conway's there.
Tim Conway.
He is.
I think if I like weirdly just seeing that clip. I think if I got a Simpsons animation cell, it would be the still of the Simpsons Smile Time Variety Hour players, where it's just like this weird eclectic group. It is like Selma, Dr. Hibbert, Jasper, and they're all in like a Saturday Night Live kind of like cast pose, and it's like that is just delightful. They never interact, but they're all in this photo together.
And the Waylon Smithers dancers.
Yes.
God, that's all. Awesome. Awful and awesome.
All right.
Talking Simpsons, everybody. If you like more of that shit, every Wednesday.
Oh, yeah.
There's not much going on in games this week. Again, there's N64 slow to release stuff, and we didn't have anything for PS quite yet. So we'll go out with the Love Matic Grandpa theme, because it is also, it'll tell you the story of how he became the Love Matic
Grandpa. He'll fill your heart with love.
But when we come back this same week, 2007.
Now he's the Love Matic Grandpa. Why so pretty, Grandpa?
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. Internet and all the ships at sea. It's time for Diana's Classic Corner. We look even further back in time this week to see if there's anything worth a watching. And for the week of May 5th through May 11th, you know, it's pretty thin. 75 years ago this week, we got Take a Letter, Darling, 1942. kind of a cute, like, romantic comedy with Rosalind Russell and Fred McMurray. Bela Lugosi and the corpse vanishes. That's kind of about it. 50 years ago, 1967, there's nothing. Literally nothing came out that week. So instead, I guess I'll fill in the gaps with a recommendation. A bunch of people reached out to me on Twitter or Facebook, whatever, asking if I had seen Five Came Back. Not only have I seen it, I'm such a hipster, I read the book before it came out. I'm that cool. So Five Came Back is a documentary, little mini-series on Netflix about the experiences of five different Hollywood directors during World War II, and it's really well done. I mean, I really enjoyed the book, but because it's about movies and making movies, getting to see some of those movies, kind of important. So, yeah, I really, really enjoyed that, and I recommend just about every single movie they talk about, but especially Best Years of Our Lives, if you want to see how people tried to cope with, like, the problems of coming home after World War II, sort of, and then that sort of got buried as we went into the 50s. It was like, don't talk about it. So, yeah, Five Came Back on Netflix. Totally recommend. And that's for this week. Stay classic.
You know, don't nothing come easy. You gotta try real, real hard. I tried hard, but I guess I gotta try hard.
I try so hard, can't seem to get away from misery.
Man, it is Bone Thugs and Harmony, I Tried, featuring Akon. Woo. Number one this week, or out this week, 2007. Other new music includes Bjork, Volta. Mm-hmm. New Moon, the posthumous Elliott Smith album, and Girlfriend by Avril Lavigne is still the number one song.
Sorry, accomplished musicians.
Yeah. But yeah, Strength and Loyalty, Bone Thugs and Harmony, featuring Akon is what brought us in. I tried. News this week, Pope Benedict the 16th canonizes this person. Frei Gavalo, Galvao?
Sure, why not?
Galvao, the first Brazilian saint.
That sounds like one of the best Assassin's Creed missions.
made canon. He actually takes place in the official timeline now of cool. Popeisms. movies this week. Spider-Man 3 is still number one at the box office. We talked about that.
Number two in our hearts.
Already.
I mean poop.
It's like number six.
I mean poop. That's
right. But also this week is Delta Farce.
Delta Farce!
I'm often asked, what makes a hero? Courage, selflessness, sacrifice.
Somebody say hero?
Meet the weekend warriors.
Stand out of touch, you miserable pissants!
If there was ever a worse excuse for a soldier, I'd like to meet him.
Why there, Sarge?
Yeah.
Snap into a Slim Jim.
We just got our order.
So, a bunch of losers with accents making fun
Keith
of
Keith David, what are you doing there?
He's making money, man.
Blue-collar USO tour.
In the mid-2000s, Keith David really needed the money.
Mid-2000s, DJ Qualls had no success to rely on.
Bill Ingvall needed a check.
Ron White, maintaining his integrity, stayed far away from the project.
Yeah.
Danny Trejo.
One of the first collaborations outside of the blue-collar comedy tour for... Because Bill Engvall was one of the cast members of this movie.
Yeah.
Bill Engvall, otherwise known as the luckiest man in the universe.
Yeah.
We got to watch him try out a catchphrase for like 3 years against our will.
Is he the Here's Your Son guy?
Yes, he was. Yeah. Wow.
Is he the one that was like, he's kind of above it all? Like, he actually had...
Oh, that's Ron White.
Ron White.
Bill
okay.
Engvall's like the most brother-in-law character of all time. Got to ride the coattails of all these other dudes. hate talking this bad about someone, but man, what a lucky dog.
But
Here's
Delta,
your sign.
I think one of our first... the Hollywood side? I think one of our first episodes we talked about Delta Force in 86, a year ago. So here we are.
Wow, 30 years later, the right on time.
Delta Farce.
The parody.
But the exact audience that would go see this loves Delta Force and still remembers it. So
directed by C.B. Harding, written by Bear Adderhold.
I will say, if I was born...
A bear.
On Adderall.
If I was born 10 years later, well, 20 years later, I would have seen this in the theater, and I would probably like this movie.
Hey,
this
I had Jeff Foxworthy's book. I'm not immune to this kind of shit.
Yeah, did Ernest not go into the military in one of the
He did.
Movies?
He did, and he was near death, so... But again, I don't watch the Ernest films.
All right.
look, I stopped with Rides Again. That was enough for me. Georgia Rule, Jane Fonda, and Lindsay Lohan.
Oh, this sounds terrible.
Nuh-uh. Ace is only low. Georgia rule. Right, Georgia?
My leg is numb.
Hey, no quitting.
Quitting? Do you hear me say quitting?
Where is my granddaughter?
She bolted from the car.
How's she gonna find me?
Go!
She's only been here once in her life.
She's easy to find.
Hello?
Just listen for a scream.
Uh-huh. So this is Lindsay Lohan playing a troubled teenager.
Mm-hmm.
Which, how did she prepare for that role?
Liv? Super method. Wow. Super. But, I mean, this is Gary Marshall.
Gary Marshall.
Usually does better than this. Jane Fonda took quite a break from acting. They came back a couple years before this.
Exclusively starring workout videos for a whole decade.
Yeah, and she's better than this. Mm-hmm. Everyone's better than this.
I mean, I think it was one of those instances where it was like, I think Lindsay Lohan had problems on set where it was like, yeah, you're partying too much for this movie where you play a person who parties too much.
What a bad week for movies. It gets really good, actually.
We also have The X with Zach Braff, Amanda Peet, Jason Bateman.
In the world of advertising.
Wait, this sounds like a really new concept. I want to hear more.
They got one more sentence.
Tom Riley was on the fast track.
That doesn't help.
This is so 2007 of rom-com cast. Zach Braff, Amanda Peet, Jason Bateman.
Yeah.
All at the peak of their powers in 2007.
But the good movie this week is Jeremy Renner, Robert Carlyle, Rose Byrne.
Idris Elba.
Yeah. 28.
Harold Perrineau from Lost.
28 weeks later.
Headed for the Green Zone, our area of security and reconstruction designated as District 1. There are a large number of bodies still left to be cleared from the original outbreak of infection. Rats and wild dogs are prevalent, as is disease. New arrivals are reminded, for their own safety, it is absolutely forbidden to cross the river and leave the security zone. Ugh.
Metaphor.
I love Danny Boyle almost more than any director in the universe. 28 days later, pretty good.
Yeah.
28 weeks later, it's way better. It's really, really good.
He didn't direct this one.
He didn't.
No. Yeah.
He didn't, but...
It's different, though.
It's way different.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
I mean, 28 Days Later was as stupid as, like, this was the big novel concept, but, like, zombies can run now. Like, zombies are actually threatening, not, like, just this big slumbering thing that you make a mistake and get killed by. Like,
yeah, it's not a reanimated corpse. It's a rage virus.
Yeah.
And it's... I know a lot of people took issue with that, but to them I say... Shut up.
Yeah.
Your criticism is not important. It doesn't have to be a zombie. It's just a new thing, but it still embodies the same basic concept. And just the transition of 28 days later, remember, Cillian Murphy wakes up in a hospital, needs to figure out what the fuck is going on. This is after, like, society has had, 5 months to adjust to the outbreak, maybe slightly contain it in some places, not in others. It's what Walking Dead does, but this movie only had two movies, or so I thought, to do it. I have never seen... 28 Days Later, The Aftermath, Chapter 3, Decimation from 07. It's a straight-to-video film. I've never seen it.
Why did they do 28 years later? They even have
the
28 months later.
20 months later.
Because if you think about Walking Dead, like the time jump into we kind of got this managed. Let's see how this can go wrong now.
Right. This was 28 Days Later was, I think, did it predate the Dawn of the Dead remake? Which also had the fast zombies.
Because
I feel like 28 weeks later is the reason we have the running zombies.
Yeah, it's just a simple thing, but it makes them a little more imposing.
They still have piles of bodies that are usually inert until they realize someone around them is alive, or not alive, but not infected or whatever. Yeah. And then they all that scene in the church in 28 Days Later where it's just like, it looks like a pile of dead bodies and the guy accidentally hits something with his foot and one of the heads perks up.
The blood landing in the eyeball. I think that was 20 days later, which is just
days.
And I never did see Weeks, but I'm sure it's good.
I've forgotten everything saw.
It's pretty good. I feel like it's a little more conventional because 28 days later, it's a lot of it is just kind of having to survive on your own and on the different ways that you would survive. And then it kind of becomes like a psychological thriller.
Yeah, where Robert Carlyle...
The first one, 28
Oh, sorry,
days,
but yeah, but...
Where they're, in a house with a bunch of soldiers and everyone doesn't trust everyone else and that becomes a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
28 weeks later, it pushes the overall story forward, the idea of, people reclaiming land, semi-spoiler, they find someone who may be immune, but can still carry the disease, and so the disease hits inside the safe zone, and there's running in chaos.
Yeah, and Robert Carlyle's character is like totally unique to any zombie movie and doesn't betray things in the same way Land of the Dead did, by being completely sentient and desiring human things. But and it also contains one of the greatest. What I love, hate about zombies is, remember the fucking 10-year-old icebreaker, what's your zombie survival plan? Like, all these movies are based on, like, well, fuck your survival plan. These are different. Yeah. Like, that doesn't work. You can't just hole up. These things are aggressive as shit.
Yeah. You can try.
So
you will fail.
This leads to my favorite zombie disposal scene in this film, which is flying a helicopter blade into a crowd of them. And that's so cool. So cool. I love this movie. I love the soundtrack. Yeah. I expected to hate this film, but it's really good.
Yeah. This movie did give me the expectation that everybody from Lost was going to have a fruitful career afterwards, because Michael from Lost is in this movie.
Right.
And then he didn't really do anything much afterwards, and neither did most of the cast.
Yeah.
Except for Matthew Fox. And Evangeline Lilly.
Yeah. Did they?
Hey, Evangeline Lilly, they made a character for her in the Hobbit trilogy.
Yeah, worked out great.
Yeah.
Unmissable.
Yes. But moving on to TV. A very reality show focused week. I am sorry, you guys. May 9th. We talked about this a couple months ago, but the final episode ever of Road Rules airs.
Oh, no. So they all get to go home now?
Yes. The Winnebago blew up.
They've been rambling on basic cable the whole time.
Their families can, you know, stop putting up posters and calling the cops all the time.
But I don't know. When Road Rules debuted, I thought, like, oh, this will be around just as long as Real World is. And it's a nice counterpoint. Like, Real World is everyone's living together. Mm-hmm. It's kind of more about the characters. But this is about the adventure, going across America, doing bungee jumping, jumping out of airplanes, doing fun, you know,
stunts and challenges.
Stunts and, yeah.
Okay. Gamifying. It's quaint what the Real World and Road Rules were, which was just put a camera on these people, see what they do.
Yeah.
But they have cell phones and televisions. Oh, we should have taken those away. I can't believe it took us 3 years to learn.
Yeah.
They won't be interesting if we don't do that.
I mean, Road Rules, they added the element a couple seasons in of people getting voted out, which I think was was kind of based on, like, when Puck was kicked out of Real World, people realized, like,
and
this
David.
David was a little bit different. Like, he wasn't voted. Like, he was kind of just kicked out. Yeah. But Puck was like, we all want you to leave. And it was like, wait, they voted him out? Hey, that's a concept. Hey. Voting someone off a reality show. And that's what Road Rules became in the final seasons. And the last season, as I mentioned a couple months ago, was just a complete shit show. Because instead of being taped months in advance, this was essentially, they would tape the week, and then the internet would vote on who gets to challenge to go into the Winnebago.
Right. There are all these kind of complicated rules to it, where it's like, wait, but then, and then there's some people that you can vote back on, and some people go to limbo.
Yeah,
and
you can come back after you get voted
out. Never can come back, and then this guy, and then we assign a point system.
It was just a mess.
And then there's parliamentary procedure in it, and then you need a quorum of the internet, and it turns out the internet only wants Hitler to come back. And Hitler's not on the show.
It was also weird because the season started with a group of all stars who had been in previous Road Rules seasons, but the people who could be voted in had never been on Road Rules, so you don't know them. Why would you even vote for them?
Yeah.
This is the most last season of a last season of reality show. Where it's like, let's change all of the rules, all of the Road Rules, and then
please still love us.
Of the road.
And then nobody cared because it was just a complete boondoggle. It wasn't anything like any previous Road Rule season. It was just a complete mess. But one show that had it more together was Survivor. On May 10th, the Survivor car curse ended. So if you're a fan of Survivor, you probably know what about the car curse. It was for the first 14 seasons of Survivor. They're up to now season 33, just for reference, because they do two per year.
Oy.
In the first 14 seasons, I think with the exception of the first one where the winner also won a car, but at some point during a Survivor season, one of the challenges would be you win a car. Instead of, like, you win a pizza, you win, like, you know, the chance to see your loved ones or a letter from your family.
Something you could use right now.
Yeah, one of them is, you win a Pontiac Aztec. Congratulations.
Oh, yeah.
And
can you use it on the island? Like, well, now I have shelter.
They
Fuck
would.
You.
It would be like, congratulations, you won the car. You drive out of the challenge. And usually it was like, you get the car, but then you get like a hamburger or something. Like, enjoy your hamburger. I don't know.
Just, I want the car.
But no.
Right now.
Yeah, but it was like the...
sleeping there.
The car curse was that whoever would win the car in earlier in the season, they never won Survivor. And it was usually like a, this person's so greedy. They already got a car. Let's get rid of them. And in like a couple seasons previous to this one, there was like an extra twist where it was like, well, you can take the car or you can give everybody else a car. That'll give you favor with everybody on your tribe, but you don't get a car.
Oh.
But so this was the final time they ever...
You could do that and fuck everyone else because they got to pay taxes on that car.
Oh, yeah. That's
and
a,
you don't.
That's what Richard Hatch went to jail for. The very first winner of Survivor didn't pay taxes on his $1 million.
Ah.
Oops. So this was the final time they ever gave away a car on Survivor. And what happened was... a contestant named Dreams, that's his name, Dreams Heard is his full name, he won the, he didn't win another contestant named Yao Man.
You got 30
Chan.
Seconds.
This was the season where they separated by race, so a contestant named Yao Man Chan, he won the car, and he said, I will give this to you, Dreams. Dreams was homeless before he got on Survivor. He's like, and it's like a really big thing, like, I will give you this car, I want you, if you win immunity later on, win immunity from being voted out,
right.
If you win immunity, you give that to me in exchange for this car. And he said, deal. Then Dreams did win immunity, and he reneged on the deal to give immunity.
Oh.
So he kept the car and immunity.
Wow.
And he did not win Survivor either. And I think because it's always a sponsorship for the car, and I think just Pontiac or whoever was like, yeah, this makes us look bad.
Uh-huh.
We don't want our car to be like this big bargaining chip that divides people and makes them angry.
Pontiac Aztec, the car of liars and thieves.
Yeah, well, they changed it around. It was a different car every year. But Pontiac Aztec is the one that everyone remembers because it was a giant box of a dumb car.
It did say Breaking Bad, right?
Oh, yeah. Was it on Breaking Bad?
It was the lame-ass car Walter White drove in his transition from Total Lame-O to Kingpin in the beginning, yeah.
Yeah, so in the 16, 17 seasons of Survivor since, they have not given away a car because it just had that bad stigma of, like, you never win, and now it's kind of being used as a bad thing on the show. So, yeah, let's not... No one wants to do that. Yeah. Anyway, the next day, May 11, 2007, there's even an element of reality to this.
Oh, God.
This is the finale of Acceptable TV, which was, like... I forget the name of the website that Dan Harmon had before.
The 101.
The 101. And it was like you could vote on a part of like a cartoon or a sketch.
Right.
Does this continue into the next week or not?
Yeah, it was a variety show, like Mr. Show or anything else like that.
Oh,
like, there's a bunch of segments that flow together. And then at the end, you could vote on, do you want to see another iteration of this gag or this one or this one?
Yeah.
And
then
one or two would go on, and then the next one wouldn't.
Yeah. And they only did.
I didn't know that Dan Harmon was with Channel 101.
And Justin Roiland. Mm-hmm. You'll hear a lot of familiar voices in both of these clips. And I figure let's continue with the reality show aspect, because one of them was Kitten Calendar, which is like an apprentice style show, but
dude,
it's for kitten photographers.
Dude, this killed me. Like,
sir, I woke up late.
Sarah, this is the calendar business. We don't do late. Sarah.
Don't say it, Mr. Bachman.
You're stumped. And you better hold tight to that tree branch, Dahlia, because you're not exactly hanging in there. Randy, you win this week, which means next week you'll be using my top kit, Sprinkle Mist. Yeah. This little will look cute in front of a gas chamber. Get some sleep, you're gonna need it. Kiss my ass, all right? Get out of here.
I just love that, like, there's, like, a joke about, like, all the cats are dead in the photos, and, like, they've all been, like, I don't know, something about Kitten Calendar, and it kept winning, and you got this sense that, like, we didn't think of this premise well for the show, because when people keep voting for a gag to go on, and it's like, but we're done with this gag.
Yeah. Right, well, it was, like, a Cat in a Hat parody, that one was animated, and it was really funny, but it's like the joke is done, and people all voted for it, and it's like, we gotta animate this fucking thing for next week, we have nowhere for this story to go, and it got weirder and more and more horrible.
Yeah,
it's like, I felt like they wanted, please stop voting for this, I beg you.
And there was one that was like homeless people fighting or something. Oh, the homeless James Bond.
I never saw this.
I gotta watch more of the show.
And it went
like
2 or 3 weeks, and then it got voted off, and I was like, well, shit, that's the one I actually wanted to watch.
Yeah. But yeah, sadly, one thing that just popped up in the finale was a continuation of where I first discovered Justin Roiland when he did House of Cosbys, which was a show about it cloning Cosbys, and Bill Cosby actually I think got legally involved and had it shut down. But then they did Cosbys, which was basically a takeoff of Gremlins, and I put a clip of it in there, and it's basically just explaining the premise.
Excuse me? What is that?
Oh, that's a Cosby.
Come on, Theo!
Oh, so it's like a little creature that resembles Bill Cosby, but you guys spell it with a K and two E's or something?
No, it's a tiny version of Bill Cosby, the public figure.
Is that legal?
It's satire. Look, he's $50 if you want him. If not, I got litter boxes to clean.
Of course I want him. He's adorable.
There are two very important rules to owning a Cosby. Never get him wet, and never feed him after midnight.
Like in Gremlins?
Like in a satire of Gremlins.
Theo, Rudy!
But yeah, the show lasted like less than a season.
Yeah, it was like two months.
Listen to these voices.
You know what she said to me?
Oh, Reggie, what'd she say, man?
I'll tell you what she said.
That's directly from the show, and there's even like a human character named Rick Sanchez. Wow.
But this got canceled, but Yacht Rock is forever in our hearts. Oof. You haven't watched Yacht Rock, I mean, you must be like 12, because I thought everyone watched Yacht Rock.
What's Yacht Rock?
It was on Channel 101. It was there. It was a series about the birth of Yacht Rock. I think it's the first place I heard that term. That was like their big breakout thing about like Michael McDonald and Christopher Cross and writing songs that are smooth that you can think about sailing with.
That sounds really familiar, but I didn't see the 101 stuff at all.
This is kind of like the Wild West period of internet video.
Pre-YouTube.
Where it's like, you want to watch the Landlord? You got to go to funnierdie.com. You want to watch Cosby's? Go to acceptable.tv.
Yeah.
What?
YouTube...
Can I just go to YouTube?
No, YouTube's around and had been around for a couple of years at this point, but it was like...
But you like to watch it in real player. QuickTime.
Well, it's YouTube, but it's like, it's all people, here's me trying to practice skateboarding.
But people were defiant in because there was no monetization option.
Yeah, we're going to build our own player.
Yep.
Did we not work at this company?
That's why Inside Baseball, the Cosby's clip is from Vimeo. Why? Like, who would have thought in 2007? Like, oh, this is a great video. Let me save it. Let me put it on YouTube. No.
Games this week in 2007: Command & Conquer 3: Tiberium Wars comes to Xbox 360. I think we talked about
RTS is on Xbox. Yeah. Yay.
But I think we talked about a prior Command & Conquer not that long ago. Driver 76 came to PSP, exclusive entry in the Driver series. Takes place in, obviously, 1976, but Driver was always a fun, like...
I loved it.
I'm
bummed it fell off the map.
If a Driver game has the number besides 3 in it, then give it a look.
I feel like Driver 2 was a letdown, but like...
Well, I think it was one of those... This was really good, and then you hit us with almost the same game a year later.
It was and also Driver 2, I think, was like, it was either 99 or 2000, and then once GTA 3 came out, I was like, oh, why would I want to go back to
that? That's right, it predates GTA.
Yeah, Driver 1 and 2 were pre-GTA 3, and then once you get into, like, Driver 3 but that's also around the Getaway, and it's like this genre of, like, let's get in a car and be the Getaway driver.
Yeah.
Other games end up doing it better. Even when you wrap it up in a 70s formula. Yeah. But I would love to see, and for what it's worth, I beat the Game Boy Color Driver game, which is surprisingly good because it's just an overhead, like, with, like, really fun skiddy physics of, like, I'm going to take this turn really wide around the city block and, like, evade cops. Like
driving through with an overhead view. Because a driver's got to do what a driver's got to do.
So I stay on track. All right, Heat Seeker. We just talked about this 2 weeks ago for PS2 and Wii, and it's a flight game, dogfighting game on PSP. And Infernal, the poorly received third-person PC shooter. I don't even remember this guy.
Yeah.
May 10th, 2007, Calling All Cars, the incognito David Jaffe, digital-only.
Only on a week like this is this the biggest game.
A top-down arcade driving game. I guess Davey Richard
barely
played it.
I barely played it, but I did buy it, and it is forever etched in my brain because it was one of the first PlayStation Network games. And if you remember the cross media bar, if you hovered over a game, it would play a little like kind of musical thing.
Yeah.
And because this was my only PS end game for so long, like
you always heard it.
This will always be playing, and I just And just that, the team that made God of War and Twisted Metal, two of, like, the most hard-edge games, blood everywhere.
Yeah, I don't want to get too much because the response to the reviews of this, I believe Michael, or you know, your husband was kind of on the brunt of this from
David Jaffe.
Yeah, from the creator of the game. He was very harsh on his critics, but it was. Microsoft had made the leap into downloadable games in the previous generation. This was Sony's first big exclusive. Yeah. No one else has this. It's by a big name dude. This should sell the digital platform. And oof.
Yeah. Oof. This and Super Rub-A-Dub are not going to win over customers. Like,
it's no pain.
Microsoft did have that. Like that. They came out a year earlier than the PS3, and they were already, XBLA was starting to really like pick up steam at this point. I mean, they're starting to get like their exclusive
Castle
games.
Crashers is imminent, so that's the real turning point for like XBLA and all that. But comments from 302010.net taking us out to the end of the show. We've got one from Beezin who says, hey, so April 28th, 2007, a time we just talked about, is the day I got married.
Hey!
It's not
Happy
really pop-
anniversary.
Yeah, it's not really pop culture related, but needless to say, it was a huge event for me. I sold my car to pay for the best party I could hope to ever throw.
Nice.
At my cousin's wedding a few months later, his brother told me that my wife and I's wedding was the best he'd ever been to. The downside to the whole event is that my mother-in-law died 3 days later on May 1st. It was completely out of the blue. My father-in-law and two brothers-in-law moved in with us for pretty much that whole week. I, being objectively the least crying, called all of the relatives back for her funeral the next weekend. It was a hell of a week.
God.
That is...
I mean...
That's awful.
Yeah.
Extremely intense.
But, like, that... She got to see her son get married. That's nice.
I guess that, yeah, that's... Yeah. That's the silver lining.
That's true. There's the last happy memory. Yeah.
Also, Pocky. Man, I have so many fond memories of Diamond and Pearl. Pokemon. 10 years old.
Diamonds and Pearl.
My friends and I were always into Pokemon, but those games are the ones we went batshit crazy. We put over 300 hours into those games. Same for me. When we had done everything possible and caught everything available, we decided we still weren't done. One of my friends held a Pokemon party where she made a bunch of Pokemon-themed foods, and then eight of us decided to act as gym leaders and made themed teams like gym leaders do, and then emailed one of our group clues to our location so he could challenge us. We each designed a unique badge to hand out when he defeated us, too. It was such a blast. Diamond and Pearl...
Mwah,
making kissy faces, love it. And finally, Zapraz Dower, Romeo and Michelle's high school reunion. Damn, I watch this movie every 5 years or so, and I think this is the only time I've ever heard it brought up by someone other than my one friend. So much love
Lots
to that
of
movie.
People love that movie. Come
I especially
on.
Love the weird synchronized staying alive dancing in the first few minutes.
Yeah,
I remember.
That was cool.
Yeah,
I wish I were that cool.
Being jealous at the time that women could dance together like that without being judged. I live in a small southern Alberta city. Well, Alberta.
Yeah.
And
that's
then,
the Texas. No, that's the Texas of Canada.
Texas
baby.
Of Canada.
Yeah.
And being labeled gay. I remember.
You're
I live
gay,
in,
eh?
I am not shitting well, you. I have cousins in Edmonton.
I live in a small southern Alberta city then, and being labeled gay was one of the worst things that could happen to you. Thank Christ, times have changed, and now I can't be bothered to care when I'm. When I'm in the places that still have ass backwards thinking.
Yeah.
But,
Romy
Michelle's house giving me
that. Does remind
dance
me.
Like, no one thinks you're gay.
It reminds me of one of my favorite lines that I didn't bring up in that episode where they're at the club and someone's hitting on Michelle and she says, "Excuse me, my shoe's filling up with blood. I have to leave."
Okay. deaths this week, May 5th through the 11th, 1997, Rawya Ataya of Egypt.
Yep.
The first female in parliament in Islam.
Yep. Ooh. In the entire Islamic world, first female in parliament. Good for our girl.
Died at the age of 71. But that is the end of the show. You can go to 302010.net and follow along every week. New episodes along with the notes for each show. Leave a good comment there. And all these comments have been great for months now, just telling us what we're going on for you in that time period and how these movies, music, and everything relate back to you and what you were doing then. You can also support the show on Patreon.com/LaserTime.
That's right. That's where we have our exclusive weekly show, Bonus Time. See what we're up to now. Occasionally, we get invited to a movie premiere, game premiere. I've done stuff you're not aware of yet. It's exclusively for patrons. They're the ones who support us, help us live, help us do this full time. We really appreciate it. And a ton of movie commentaries there, including recent 302010 entries, G.I. Joe the Movie, and Hot Fuzz.
Yeah. And may look forward to Denver Broncos and Denver Broncos. but I'm sure there'll be some great movies for May. And also, it's the home of Cheap Podcast, the pro wrestling podcast. There's going to be Payback. I always mix it up, Payback and Backlash.
Payback
we'll have an episode
just
about
call them
that.
Paybacklash.
Yes.
I will have
Paylash.
I will have been to Payback by the time this airs. Because it's in our neighborhood.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. San Jose.
No idea.
gonna go get paid back.
With the back Anyway, if you like video game talk, and of course you do, then there's also a whole show of it called Video Game Apocalypse every week. And if you want to talk about like classic film stuff and whatever, I am on Twitter at LecineNerd, LecineNerd. I've been asked to spell it because it sounds weird.
I just got a plug. In honor of 302010 bringing up Austin Powers, we streamed the awful Pokemon Gold and Silver, Dr. Evil, and Austin Powers games.
It's Obehave, and welcome to my secret lair.
They are incredible. Yes. Rockstar presents, for real, two Austin Powers games. Yeah. Incredibly... the worst games I've ever played live.
So ugly.
And if you liked our Simpsons Family Smile Time Variety Hour talk, we have Talking Simpsons Smile Time Variety Hour.
That brings us to the final segment of the show, the birthday quiz.
Oh, birthday!
But this time around...
I'm taking over the birthday quiz.
Do it.
Everyone, get out of my way.
And Brett, you're taking over for me as a perennial loser.
There's no competition now.
I'm going to lose. I'm definitely losing.
So, two people that have birthdays in this week, one male, one female. We'll start with, born in 1926, he served on a torpedo boat tender in World War II. Studied acting at the American Academy of Dramatic Arts.
Okay. Kirk Douglas?
Could not get work, so he started doing stand-up and became known for how he dealt with hecklers.
Don Rickles?
Don Rickles!
Yes!
Damn.
Wow.
R.I.P. Don Rickles.
R.I.P. Yeah. He would have been 91.
Fellow DR.
Yeah.
Hello,
oh,
Ice
there
Queen.
You go. You got one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This and Melissa Joan Hart.
Yeah. I've watched that one clip from Dirty Work, like, 15 times in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Man, it's so sad because Rickles was still so sharp up to the end. Like, anytime he was on a talk show.
Baskin Robbins called.
Anyway, all right, our second quiz. Born in 1968, she appeared in Serial Mom, Married with Children, Melrose Place.
Not Kathleen Turner.
No.
Ricky Lake.
No.
Damn!
Kinky Business, Talk Dirty to Me 3, Blade, New Wave Hookers, the Mortal Kombat soundtrack.
Tracy Lords.
There you go. Tracy
Lords. I lost.
That one was custom made for Brett,
dude. Because when I'm like, Mortal Kombat, a person starred in the Mortal Kombat soundtrack, and then I'm like, wait, actress. Oh, Tracy Lords.
Mm.
Yep. Control is the song. It's the song when the reptile and Liu Kang are fighting.
Mm. Yep.
Ask me more later.
Thank you.
I had to throw in some of her porn titles just for the funsies, but I mean, obviously, also Zach and Miri Make a Porno, Crybaby. And her most recent one, Sharkensaw Women's Prison Massacre.
Yikes.
I love Tracy Lords.
Sharkensaw.
Yeah, and they couldn't even tell what were the porn titles in there because that was back when porn titles, like, they weren't just SEO bait, like, MILF fucks, 8 dudes with big hogs.
I know.
Part 3.
New Wave Hookers. New Wave 4K, Hookers was, like, 4K. The dirtiest of the titles
I
found.
Yeah, but that could also be, like, a movie that just came out in 1987 about...
Fine, we'll go out with the aforementioned Control from Mortal Kombat soundtrack, 1995. A banger, this one.
Woo.
We'll catch you next week for more of what happened 30, 20, 10 years ago.